Welcome back. We're back from lunch. We are moving on to agenda item 10. Deer general seasons and special permits. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Sarah, you're not Sarah. Okay.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter, and other members of the commission. So, as you noticed, I'm not Sarah Hansen. Sarah is our statewide deer specialist. I'm Brock Hanus. I'm the deer and elk section manager. Sarah had to return home for a family emergency, so I'm going to be presenting the deer general season, deer special permit, and carcass importation wax on her behalf. So, let's see. We'll begin with deer. So our management goals for deer are pretty straightforward. We want to manage for stable populations while maximizing opportunity and providing hunting season recommendations that don't propose a risk to the resource. So a little history on our deer harvest. This is our deer harvest trends for 2001 through 2017. Overall, it's been pretty stable. We had a downward trend in the mid-2000s. We came back up to 2015, came back up to historical numbers. We've had recent declines in the last couple years. A couple events that have affected our deer populations, especially in eastern Washington, was a pretty significant blue tongue outbreak in 2015 that was well documented, and then the severe winter conditions that occurred in 2016 during the winter of 2016. That was actually a western-wide event that was well documented throughout the West and received national attention in that year. And so we have seen a decline in our harvest and a decline in our deer populations in the last couple years. So in 2018, we completed surveys in five of our mule deer management zones: the Snake River, the Medhow, Douglas County, Chelan, and Klickitat. These are the results from those. Our post-hunt buck-to-doe ratios were within the range of our management objective. They were a little low down in the Snake River region. Our fawn-to-doe ratios, for the most part, were where we want to see them. When we conduct a post-hunt season survey, we generally want to see our fawn-to-doe ratios in the 60 per 100 range, and we were there at that level in most of our deer populations. The one exception was down in the South Snake River area. We were hovering around 50. So for black-tailed deer, we don't have a really good way to monitor that species, so we primarily rely on harvest data as an indicator of population trend. At this time, there's no indication that we have any concerns with black-tailed numbers in Western Washington. So for white-tailed deer, we primarily rely on harvest data. There are some locations that we do have check stations, so we do have field reports. We also talk to hunters at that time, use some of that information to inform the status of those populations. We also have some ancillary data that's collected during mule deer surveys. In some of our more open areas, we do see whitetails during those surveys and may use some of that information to inform management. And in a lot of our districts, we conduct road-based composition surveys. So we've heard a lot today about populations in Northeast Washington, and these are our long-term buck-to-doe ratios from that region. They've been pretty stable over the last 18, 19 years. So this is the second year of a three-year package season. We have no major changes proposed for black-tailed deer or mule deer. For white-tailed deer, we have a proposed change to add 5 days to the early antlered opportunity in GMUs 169 and 179. That's down in, or 175, that's down in the Blue Mountains. For muzzleloader black-tailed deer, we're proposing to add early antlered opportunity in GMU 621, add late antlerless opportunity in GMU 667, and remove late opportunity in deer area 6020. So based on those proposals, the public comments we got, we had 5 in support. There was really no common theme in that. We had 23 opposed to our recommendation. The common theme with opposition was folks that were advocating for decreased antlerless opportunity in Northeast Washington and implementation of antler point restrictions. And we had 13 neutral comments, and there was no common theme among those. So in response to the public comments that we've got, we have a proposed recommendation to eliminate antlerless whitetail deer opportunities in GMUs 101 through 121. This would include the modern youth, senior, and disabled general season opportunities during the modern firearm season, early and late archery opportunities for antlerless, and early muzzleloader opportunities. In addition, we had originally proposed a late muzzleloader antlerless opportunity for black-tailed deer in 654, and based on some direct conversations with some of the local constituents there, and then also an additional review of data and looking at analyzing what trends of deer numbers in that GMU were, we decided to pull back on that proposal as well and retain it back to late muzzleloader black-tailed buck. So with that, I'll field any questions related to the deer general seasons.
Do we put in our orders now, or can I start? I just want to support the antlerless removal from the District 1 GMUs, and definitely will be supporting that when we vote on it. In addition to the hits that our whitetail population has taken, that you mentioned the disease outbreak in the hard winter, we're having another. We thought we were going to have a pretty good time for our deer this year, but we're having another hard winter, and the does are all pregnant right now, so I think it's of concern, although they were pretty well fed when this started falling, but now that they're pregnant and needing more nutrition, I think this may stack up to be another hard winter, so I think it makes sense to eliminate antlerless this season.
I want to echo what Commissioner Thornburn is saying about antlerless hunts being restricted, and I had a recent conversation with representatives from the Guides and Outfitters from the Methow and Okanagan. They have the same concerns that we have way too many permits available for archery, muzzleloader, and we need to really be cautious with herd compositions now. The buck-to-doe ratios are should be protected, and in fact, we need to really take a hard look at how many permits we're issuing for antlerless in that region as well. And so I'd like to see some recommendations along those lines.
Yeah, we'll cover that in the next.
Okay.
We cover special permits. That's addressed.
Good.
Okay, we'll move on to deer.
Thank you, Chair. Needless to say, we had a lot of very concerned people in here this morning. And where's our fallback? I mean, are we stuck with a 3-year plan? This is what we're going to do? Or is there any way we could make some adjustments? Or this is where we're going?
I think in the short term, yeah, at least for the next 3 years. That'll be our recommendation. We'll develop that recommendation and put it out for public review and see what, how much support is for that.
So you're saying that where we're at today is where we're going to be for 3 years?
Northeast Washington right now, I mean, that would be my proposal, yes. Because it's going to take at least, you know, implementing a recommendation for at least a few years before you're going to be able to assess whether it's achieving the goal that folks want to see. And so you can't implement this in 1 year and make a judgment based off of that. So that would probably be my recommendation.
If anything, we've got more liberal with our hunting, because here, how many years ago was it we did away with the four-point rule up there, which I did not vote for, but anyway. So we're just going to keep chugging right down the track and not listen or pay attention to what's going on, huh?
Well, I think the removal of the antlerless opportunity is in response to the concerns about the resource that we've been hearing.
How many are we talking about with that? How many doe tags?
So this is the general season. So okay. When we cover special permits, we're also proposing to eliminate the special permit antlerless.
Just some of them?
No, all of them.
Okay.
And so what I can tell you is that the general season youth, disabled, senior hunters account for at least half of the doe harvest that comes from District 1. And the other half is associated with either damage permits or the permits that we offered through our pamphlet.
But like to shorten some seasons, that would be 3 years down the road.
To shorten the season?
Yes, shorten some seasons.
Yeah, we have not considered shortening the seasons at this point. So right now, I think the biggest bang for your buck to get a response out of that population is going to be to remove antlerless harvest. The buck harvest has nothing to do with population trajectory. There is ample evidence in the research that the number of bucks on that landscape has very little influence on pregnancy rates and the ability of that population to reproduce. There's documented cases where populations have buck to doe ratios that are down in single digits. We've seen that in past, in Washington ourselves. And even at those times when those populations have that few of bucks, we still see pregnancy rates that are consistently above 90%. So a lot of the association between the number of mature males in a population and the relationship that has with reproductive potential, that comes from the elk world, and it just hasn't carried over into deer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is kind of a process question that gets to the thrust of this 1 year versus 3 year, and where's the boundary between what the commission might want to take on compared to what was advertised to the public and public had a chance to have open comment on. So, for example, if the commission wanted to consider what's been presented on the basis of the scientific evidence and wanted to weigh that against the public testimony that seems to be, well, we haven't heard it yet, but let's presume that it's similar to what we heard this morning, that I kind of was hearing that people want a little bit more cautious approach to the hunting pressure level. But let's suppose that the commission wanted to consider that and wanted to have that be a possible reaction in April, and wanted to I think Commissioner Holzmiller might have been talking about a shorter season than whatever is recommended. If there's a 10-day season, if the commission wanted to consider a 5-day season, or if the commission wanted to consider eliminating the late buck season or shrinking that in half or doing something, what's an eligible consideration in this process since we're not in a 3-year period? We're in the middle of a 3-year period. The next 3-year period, public comment starts next year in 2020, I guess. But so again, it's a process question. So we've got March, we're hearing all this stuff and considering some tinkering, and we should be able to react to public comment if we want to tinker a little bit more, have it analyzed between now and April, and in April, I would hope there'd be some public comment if there's big changes, but anyway, to consider something a little different than what we've heard here today, as opposed to get locked into exactly what was there, which goes back to what got on the website in the middle of January and had a open comment period on the staff proposals only. But I guess if the commission wanted to consider something other than those original January staff proposals, is that a legitimate opening in the process? And there's the man over there who knows. Okay.
Yeah, everything is open for change in these interim years. We only make the recommendation changes that we think are needed, and most of those are related to biological issues that deal with populations, and that's why we are recommending no doe harvest and all these other things. So yeah, all of those things are for you to consider and are for you to make decisions on as you see fit. We are going to recommend the biological, and it is for you to weigh that biological versus the social.
Remember, I had a question. It does look like we are shortening the season and by a few days. I'm looking at the table, and I think I've forgotten my question. So, you're saved.
Okay. With that, we'll move on to deer special permits. So as in every year, we adjust our quality special permits up or down based on available data and need to balance the resource. And also that those efforts are associated with balancing allocation that we have between the user groups. We're proposing to reduce quality archery and modern permits in GMUs 382, 388, 578, and 574. That's down in the Klickitat, and what's driving that is the last couple years, as in some other places, we've seen a reduction in our deer population down there. We've had very low participation rates on these permits. We've had low success rates, and so we're going to be proposing to pull back on those a bit in response to that information. We are proposing to increase modern antler opportunity in GMU 284. And those were our original proposals. We received 6 supporting comments. There was no general theme amongst those comments. We received 23 opposed comments and 3 neutral. In the opposition comments, the common themes were, again, reduced antlerless opportunity and antler point restrictions in District 1. The other common theme, Commissioner Grable, was reduction of antlerless opportunities in District 6, which is the Okanagan and Methow Valley areas. We did not recommend any adjustments into the proposals to the Okanagan and Methow, and the reason is because that area has had over 400,000 acres of prime winter mule deer habitat burn in the last 4 years. We've seen that has resulted in lower quality habitat for mule deer, both in the winter and in the summer. In response to that, we have seen a reduction in our post-hunt fawn-to-doe ratios, which is an indication that productivity has declined, and we've also seen decreased overwinter fawn survival. We believe that that is strongly tied to the current conditions of that habitat, and until it recovers, we don't anticipate we're going to see that population improve in terms of reproduction and productivity. Our most recent estimate was 10 to 15,000 does in that population, and the last 2 years we've harvested, the average harvest has been 357 does. And so even if you eliminated that doe harvest, it's going to do very little to change the trajectory of that population.
When I recently met, I also had a follow-up meeting with our Region 2 big game guy, and he did explain that strategy that browse is recovering, the potential food source is just coming back, and keeping the herd levels low for a period will actually, for the long term, benefit the herd.
Yeah, and that was the initial response to those catastrophic fires was a large increase in permits that resulted in a harvest in 2 years of like 700-800 does. Mm-hmm. After those 2 years, we backed off a little bit and brought those down in response to concern about the resource. But our position is still that it's probably better for us to kind of keep that population down and give that habitat a chance to recover.
Understood. Thank you.
Regarding the permits in the GMUs 101 to 121, it also appears that the season's considerably shortened from last year. Is that correct? I'm looking at the table on page 19 and 20 of the rules. As I read it, take, for example, GMU 105, which is a white-tailed buck permit, and it's going from last year, October 20th to November 21st to November 20th to 24th. And there are a number of those units where that's going on. Is that anything that needs to be emphasized, or is there any reason for it?
I'm not sure. I may, if the commission would allow, I may have to, we could check with the local biologist that's here, and she may be able to provide a little bit of information related to that. You okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Is it?
Oh, she's not here. She was here.
She was.
So I can look into that one and get back to you. I'm not sure if they, we have some instances where we open seasons not necessarily on a hard calendar date. You know, like all of our general seasons open, you know, like the first Monday, Tuesday after Labor Day for archery. And so,
right,
you know, the first weekend after archery. And so sometimes the number of days between those seasons varies from year to year based on, you know, that approach. And so maybe it's related to that, but I'll check into it.
It seemed fairly considerable, which is why I noticed it. It goes from a month to 5 days. So,
yeah.
As I read the chart, so.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On pages 39 and 40, well, I'll just show you these real detailed pages where there are individual hunt names and dates, and there's been some changes in the dates and some changes in the permits. That's what went out to the public for comment. And actually, maybe I'm going to hold my questions until after public comment, but maybe if you could be available after public comment for a couple of questions on that. Yeah.
Thank you. Absolutely. Okay, so with that, we'll move on to our importation and retention of dead non-resident wildlife. And so the intent of this WAC is really to reduce the risk of chronic wasting disease. To date, Washington has no confirmed cases of CWD within the state. In recent months, the state of Tennessee has documented CWD in free-ranging white-tailed deer, and so we're proposing to add the state of Tennessee to the WAC.
Just a quick question. How many states is that now that are tallied?
I want to say 24, but don't hold me to the fire on that.
And the closest going east is Montana?
Montana.
Let's get close. I don't know. Are we about to questions? Because I remembered my question.
Oh. Welcome.
I think I recall Woody, when he was capturing, doing winter captures on deer, would often be able to tell if the doe was pregnant, and we've done some whitetail winter captures. Do we have a sense? I know it would be anecdotal, but do we have a sense of how the pregnancy's been going this season from those whitetail captures?
I don't know if they're assessing pregnancy rates at time of capture. That would require an ultrasound, and I don't know if they're doing that, and I'm not sure if they're, the other way they could look at that is drawing blood and looking at PSPB analysis, and I'm just not certain if they're doing that. I would assume that they are.
I'm sorry, sir, can't take your questions or comments from the back if you've signed up. Okay. Okay, thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Okay. We good?
All right. So,
any questions from the front table? Yes. Okay. Well, thank you, Rock, I guess. I do have public comments. I'm just seeing here.
So what page are we on, Kim?
I'm on deck for I'm on deck for the next three.
Okay, we're at public comments on agenda item 10, and I'm going to call you up 3 minutes. You get 3 minutes. I think all of you probably know the routine. When you hear the magic buzzer over here by Miss Tammy, please finish your sentence so we can move on. Dean McKinnon, Russ McKinnon, and John Maggard.
There are three chairs.
Yeah, you must move over one, or it'll go back one row if you don't mind, Brock. And welcome back, gentlemen. Dean.
As far as the reduction of antler list in the Northeast, unfortunately, I think we're at the point where that has to happen. Our deer numbers are really down, but that's just part of the puzzle. And contrary to what this guy was just sitting here saying, every study I read, you know, says different about the buck to doe ratio, the age structure of bucks, and how it impacts the herd. You got to have a more natural buck to doe ratio and age structure for it to function properly. Young bucks, even 2.5-year-old bucks, they're not making scrapes, they're not rutting as hard. If you don't have enough bucks, you know, yeah, 90% of the does are probably getting bred, but not when they should. They won't get bred the first time. They'll go into a second estrus. They'll get bred late. So what you have is all these bucks that end up rutting several weeks longer than they should. They're wearing themselves out. They're going into winter in terrible condition, and they have a less likely chance of surviving the winter because they've been rutting too long. Now, all those does that got bred late, they're having their fawns late. So now, instead of all the fawns being born in one small time period, it's spread out, making them more susceptible to predators. All those fawns that got born late because the does were bred late, they're going into winter smaller than they should. They have a worse chance of surviving the winter. We got to get the 4-point minimum back, not just in 121 and 117. It needs to be throughout the Northeast region. We saw with our own two eyes how just a few short years improved everything so much when we implemented that 4-point. And we also saw how we lost all the progress we made like that when we took it away. I want the 4-point minimum back. Everybody I know does. We all saw that it worked. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Dean. Russ.
First, I'd like to say that I think it was a little bit deceiving to display statewide deer numbers when, obviously, when you go to the other page, the area of concern is unit 101 to 121. And if you look at your own harvest data for 121 and 117, you'll see that the data he put up there is so far from correct that it's a shame. I mean, you should be embarrassed to put those numbers up because they're not true. As far as the one guy that said we need to get rid of baiting for deer, the people that I know of that are against baiting, what they're actually against is the people that hunt and bait deer and draw what they consider their pet deer off their private property and then kill them. It should be a crime for the way it's done all over in the little bit more cut up areas where you have a landowner, which I know several, that put out alfalfa, corn, and sweet cob to keep their pet deer from wandering into an area where they're going to get shot. Bait, even though I seldom use it, it's a situational thing, it is usually unproductive. What it does is right before winter, it gives a lot of deer of the year and fawns extra nutrition so they go into the winter nice and fat. They are at no more risk for CWD than all the deer that wind up on the hay barn. So we need that four-point rule to bring the quality of the deer back up, ensure that they get bred in a timely fashion, ensure that the does fawn in a timely fashion. On my property, I see them fawn from June 1st within a week till August, the first week of August. I see the bucks breed. The last one I saw breed this year was December 3rd, and that's just when I happen to see them. And it just goes way too long, and they're run down. Like one deer that Dean got a year ago did not have 1 ounce of fat on his body anywhere, and he was a 10-year-old deer. So there you go. That's all I got.
Thank you, Russ. John Maggart?
Okay. Well, I have a bunch of stuff written down here, but these guys are pretty much echoing what or saying ahead of me what I was going to say, at least in part. The first comment I have, though, is you talked about the three-year package. Ever since the three-year package came into existence, it's just been a total pain as far as watching the Fish and Wildlife manage ungulates. It's a bad deal. Ungulates need to be managed year by year, because, you know, especially up in this area. You might be able to get away with it in other places, but up here where we have such a variation in winter and weather and disease, and now we got such an ungodly amount of predators, you can't manage it on a three-year deal. In 61 years of licensed hunting up here, I've never seen so few deer as I'm seeing on the landscape right now, and that includes the winters of 68 and 69. That was the worst I ever seen up till now. And this has been a progression deal, not just one big sudden bad winter that's caused this. This is a progression deal, and we warned about this for years, that we were headed in this direction into a total disaster and a catastrophe with the whitetail herd, especially. If you go out in the mountains now, there are no mule deer. The wolves have taken care of that. And whatever straggled down lower where the wolves weren't at, the cougars got them. So we did have a pretty nice little bunch of mule deer up there. Not anymore. They're done. The four-point rule, okay, I agree with everything about the no antlerless harvest and stuff like that. I think it's a wonderful thing. We told the biologists this a year ago. In fact, before the 2017 hunting season, that we shouldn't be harvesting any antlerless, at least not as many as there were. Anyway, we support that. My group supports that. But the four-point rule was a good rule. In 2014 compared to 2013, there were 329 more bucks killed in 117 and 121 than there was in 2013. All the other units combined from 2014 back to 2013, there were two less killed. Now, I got to remind you that those bucks that were killed in 117 and 121 are all four-point or better. So don't tell me it doesn't work, because it's as plain as the nose on your face that it does. I'll argue that with anybody. And that's what these guys are talking about. Everybody likes it now.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next three is Dale Maggart, Bob Ames, and Chris Hedrick. Go ahead, Dale.
My name is Dale. I was actually going to do this tomorrow, but some things were said, so, and I haven't been able to cut it back, so I'm going to have to read it, I think, and read it fast, because otherwise I won't be in the 3 minutes. I wanted to do a little bit of adjusting on it, but we'll go for it. Our harvest in District 1, Region 1, is the lowest they've been in since 2011. The low numbers for 2011 were expected as a result of the implementation of a four-point restriction in GMUs 117 and 121. This implementation was a result of pressure on the commission to halt the slide in harvest from 6902 in 2007 to 4947 in 2010. 4 years later, and the harvest had rebounded better than the previous 6 years.
They removed the restriction in 2015. Harvest shot up 44% to almost 8,000 as hunters shot the hell out of the once again healthy whitetail populations in 117 and 121. Been downhill all since. Last year's numbers to be in the 4,000 vicinity, 50% of what it was in 2015. We decimated the herd up there. I want to speak about this pregnancy thing. 90% of them are pregnant. They tested pregnant. They're pregnant with fawns that were from a doe that was bred late. Maybe they all get bred. Maybe 90% of them get bred. But 40% of them are dropping their fawns in August or July. Talked about it. I hate that. They blame this largely, this decrease on disease and loss of habitat. You heard about the blue tongue. We presented documentation to the department up in Colville one day about the blue tongue from Springdale to Kettle Falls up there, and it didn't even hardly get a second look. And they went on to tell us that it's not really any worse than other outbreaks in the past. And of course, now, I just read in the paper a couple days ago, now the district says deer numbers were decimated by the outbreak. When we were telling them about it, it wasn't that big a deal. It wasn't any worse. So when they agreed to reduce the doe harvest to 4 days for youth, senior, and disabled only, they went back to Olympia and forgot to put it in the doggone regs. So, regardless of what is causing the problem, you need to realize that we have a problem and a big problem. We need consistent data to make correct decisions in order to save our ungulates if they can be saved. Last year, the commission was told the survey method to ascertain deer numbers was not working, and they were going to be trying something different once they decided what that might be. Of course, the new method will make the past numbers irrelevant, and a new baseline will be established that will depict an entirely different picture than the lousy numbers we have now. Harvest numbers have been manipulated. The new formula for the non-compliant harvest in 2016 and 17 to conceal unsatisfactory info. We don't use fawn ratios anymore. Can you believe that? Never even mentioned it in this presentation. No fawn ratios. We don't know how many fawns are out there. How can you have a harvest? Okay, I'm about done. I'm not against finding a better way. By this, I mean more accurate way to determine what shape the resource is in. I do think, however, that until a new method has been used long enough to set a reliable trend, we need to continue to use the current system with their established trends. These are our harvest records and transect data. And I also suggest that the non-compliant harvest data be discontinued as it has been proven to be fraudulent. We are on the brink of serious collapse in our ungulates, and some drastic steps need to be taken. Thank you.
Yeah, I think the 4-point minimum restriction up in the Northeast where we're from is mandatory. And I think we need to, with all our situations, with all the predators and stuff, I think we need to build those younger bucks back up and not have them harvested. And, I mean, it's just not a 4-pointer minimum problem. It's all the predators and the bigger picture that we have going. And I think that would really help a lot. From what I've noticed up where I live in Colville. Thanks.
My name is Chris Edrick. I'm a third generation ranch owner. Our ranch has been in our family since 1896. We have approximately 1,100 acres. We're blessed with a very diverse landscape of 90% timber and 10% agriculture, and we have a very diverse wildlife population consisting of everything from all the predators that we know that we've already talked about down to from turkeys all the way to moose and elk and a deer population. I'm here to talk at a 5-year perspective of what I've seen from our ranch in the last 5 years. And what I see is from the past 5 years, we see approximately a 20% decrease in the amount of deer that's coming in our fields. I know that that the count is pretty accurate because I'm kind of like my dad. I sit in the evenings and look at the deer coming into our fields. Historically, we've had as many as 150 deer in our field back in the days when John Andrews was regional manager and Steve Zenner were doing fawn counts on our place. We had a great working relation with those guys, and there would be no less than 150 deer in our field when they do the counts. And now the most that I've seen this summer at one time was a total of 47 deer in one evening, 17 of which was bucks. I think that's kind of skewed because I think that the ratio between buck and doe is actually farther apart than what it shows there, but I think that the bucks come in to the alfalfa more where they're growing the horns in the summertime more than the does do, so that could be skewed. I think that probably 60% of the deer feed in our fields and probably another 40% that never come in. Based on those numbers, we usually try to kill 30% of the bucks that we have available. And so this year we took three with a rifle and one with an archery. What I see happening is a good example in January this year. We traditionally always try to log in January so there's habitat and food available for the deer a little bit more. And we had approximately 25 deer working the logging in a 2.5 weeks that they were there. Logging that 40 acres, the loggers found three cat kills. And I know at that particular time, because we had snow off and on every day, that there was a minimum of four different cats that was working that particular area. And so I know that based on that, I think that mostly that our decrease on our ranch by 20% a year, if you take that number that we lost three deer in 2.5 weeks, that would be 5% of the deer that are carrying on our place. And so I think that solely comes back to a predator issue because nothing else has changed on our place. And we have, and I mean, it's pretty tightly controlled. And so, and I just want one more comment that it was stated by the presentation guy that a low buck ratio has nothing to do with the amount of fawns being produced. First thing that was proposed was to cut seasons. So by my way of thinking, that's kind of a knee-jerk proposal to do, and the fact that taking people out of the field, numbers a day out of the field, is not really changing the amount of what's happening here in the overall landscape. I think what needs to be addressed is a predator issue, and I think that if you start eliminating days in the field, you're also eliminating revenue and people that are going to be out there doing that.
I'm going to call three more for just a second. There was a question just handed to me that I'd like to, Brock, get some clarification, I think, from you on. Earlier, Kim asked a question, Kim, from Commissioner Thorburn, about reduced whitetail hunting seasons. And I guess I'd like to get a little more clarification on where that was going. And then based on what this gentleman just said, that he didn't agree with that, maybe we could...
Are we talking about the reduction in the season baits?
Yeah.
And the number of days for some of the permits? Yeah, so I just saw our district bio walk in the room, so I think I'm going to have her come up and assist answering that question.
That would be helpful. If you gentlemen want to go back to your chair, be comfortable with...
Yeah, I will. Hi, Anne Marie. You can't talk so much. Thanks for... being willing to come forward, arm twisted or whatever. I was looking at pages 19 and 20 in our in the rule. It's the table that shows the permits for the for your district's units. And the dates that are struck, so I presume they're the current dates. Oh, thanks, Bill. It's a full month, it looked like, that there was a permit hunt. And it's gone down to 5 days, and I was that wasn't highlighted in the presentation, but it seems like a fairly significant change, and I was just wondering what was behind that.
Yeah, so I think, let me look here.
Somebody give her the mic.
Yeah, so I think what we decided to do is, so those actually ended, so the District 2 permits go later than the late season, more into what you'd think of as the peak of the rut. And so these are quality buck permits. And so what we did is we, because you already have the late season, the general late season in which you could harvest a buck, but then we actually extended it later, thinking that that would actually be a more quality hunt because it's higher in the peak of the rut. And all the modern firearm hunters are out of the woods. So basically you're the only person in there hunting still.
Okay.
So that was our thought behind it.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how it works out.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Chairman. So that was the dates for a permit hunt. It was just for 5 permits. And so on page 13 and 14, I'm not sure if I've got this right, but earlier, that I guess that's, anyway, for a general season or an archery season or for a muzzleloader season, for whitetail, when I looked through this, it didn't look like the staff is recommending any change in the season dates. Okay, just to be clear on that. And so what we're hearing again from the public is kind of asking for greater caution and a more conservative kind of a conservation pitch. But the staff has not recommended any shrinking of the season during the regular season, and it's just in these permit areas.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up now Craig Ellenbott, Freddie G., because I can't pronounce his last name very well, and Aaron Burkhart. Take it away, Craig.
Thank you, Commission. Just to reiterate kind of what I'm here for and what I'm about, in case somebody didn't catch it earlier. My name is Craig Ellenbolt, Ambassador for Hunt of a Lifetime. We are a nonprofit organization dedicated to fulfilling hunting and fishing-related wishes to youth under 21 with life-threatening illnesses. I spoke earlier and touched on some of the points that we were requesting for permits in big game in general. And I'd like to cover a little bit more in depth, if I have enough time here, to request some permits for not only deer, but elk and big game in general. But under the deer section here, covering the other states that have different types of programs for terminally ill, we also have a terminally ill program in Washington State, but it somewhat hampers the ability to find hunters with terminally ill diseases. Because of the 9-month hospice designation. That's not necessarily in the WAC, not in the RCW. It's been something I believe that the director has been able to set out at some point in the past. So what we're looking for is, we understand the process of the 3-year. I'm not sure exactly where we land in that. I think this is year 2 of 3, and next year is the start. Nonetheless, I'm not sure exactly where it falls or if we're able to make those kind of changes. But it does state in the WAC there's some flexibility for the director to set up any type of terminally ill permits. And we're just requesting the commission direct the director to be flexible enough under the WAC 220, 200, 130 to accommodate up to 5 use this year until we can bring it to the the three-year proposal for special permits for deer and elk. It does not, it's shown, so it doesn't mention the hospice designation, which makes it much easier for us to be able to find the kiddos in that time frame with hunting seasons as hard as they are. And then in the long term, hopefully work out a program to where we can continue this with whatever the number of permits that we can do and get as many kids out in the field as we can with their short lives.
Mr. Baker?
I think listening to the questions and answers the first time you came up, I'm guessing here, but I think it's obvious that you have the support of the commission. It would be hard not to support a request such as yours. So my question is really for the director.
Sorry.
I guess I got to stop. Kelly, what do you need anything from us to work through this? And at some point, I'd like to know a little bit more about it, including, who your competition is, if that's what you call it. How many of these are necessary to take care of every kid with a terminal illness who wants to hunt in this state? But for right now, do you need anything from us to help out?
I'm going to ask staff to come up first. So this came up earlier, and I talked to Bill for some legal advice on just what my latitude is. He worked with some staff, and I think we're about to hear him. But I'm very supportive, and I will exercise the maximum flexibility I can.
Our current rule does not say that they have to be in hospice care for 9 months or whatever. Our current rule says they do have to be terminally ill. So if they get a note from their doctor saying they're terminally ill, then we do issue them a permit. We've never turned anybody down, period, whether they're youth. So we don't have a set-aside number of permits. We have an unlimited number of permits. And usually it's roughly around maybe 10 folks and the most that take advantage of this, but we do it regularly. It's not something that needs to be a set-aside permit. Once we start setting aside permits for different groups, then it becomes actually a more complicated issue, because then you'll see other groups wanting those set-aside type permits. So currently, actually, I think it's maybe broader than this gentleman would like, thinks it is, but they do have to have a note that they are terminally ill. So that's the only real. So I guess I'm not sure that anything. The director can issue these permits at his discretion under this rule, given that they're terminally ill.
Well, thank you. And just as a follow up, if you guys could talk, excuse me, and come back and let us know, or the director know, if you need more than that would be, then
sure.
I think we'd all be at least happy.
Yeah, we would love to work.
Thank you.
And if you want to work with us on, if you have folks that want to get into that program, we'd be glad to help.
I have a language quibble. As a physician, I never felt that I could say somebody was terminally ill, because that implies that I'm saying the person's going to die. But I am willing to say that the person has a terminal illness, one that causes death quite frequently. So I would hope that you look at it in that light, that the physician or provider says this is a terminal illness, one that frequently causes death, but doesn't necessarily.
Yeah,
that's the whole issue with hospice as well.
And what we call that is life-threatening illness, because the terminal name is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I think it would help if you clarify procedure with him. As you said, you don't issue these permits to groups, but you will honor any request. So it's a matter of procedure and how they ask for the permit, I think should be clarified.
If I'm correct, I think this gentleman worked with Don McIsaac on this, and I did send them all the information required to submit that, but I'm happy to work with them one-on-one with the process.
Maybe instead of elongating this discussion today, because I think we all have our arms around it, you guys work it out internally, externally, then report back to us on the final state of things. Would that match
I would love
the needs?
To do that, yeah.
All right. I'm sorry, Dr. McIsaac, do you have anything you wanted to?
I'd like to elongate the discussion another 20 or 30 minutes, but no, as long as there isn't any problem with these folks being the intermediary between the individuals.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. You're dismissed now. Freddie, good to see you again, and then Aaron right behind you.
I'd like to address Kim's question. You're talking about Woody Myers. Woody Myers came to one of our meetings on that whitetail study that he did, and he said he had a 92% pregnancy rate in the does. And I said, so where did you collect the does from? 108, 111, 105, 101? Every doe that he had was collected in 121 and 117 that were four-point areas. I said, where is your scientific data that shows, could show, whether the four-point is working? None of those does were tested in 101 or 105, 108, 111. There was any buck. So how can you have scientific data when you don't have all the parameters of the entire area and what's going on? Okay. In 2015, I brought in 266 signatures from people in Colville that were collected in 18 days. 261 of them from the entire Tri-County area were in favor of the four-point. Only five were against it. That was brought up in 2015, and it was never went any further than that. We put quite a few people in here today that are all in favor of the four-point and cougar harvest and what have you. And a lot of you members, or your newer members, don't possibly know what's going on up there. These people that are speaking here today are very passionate about it. They've lived here all their lives. They know what's going on. And it would be remiss if this commission does not take the testimony of these people to heart. The cougar issues are bad, but the deer issue is even worse. The deer issue is we're going to restrict antlerless harvest. And that's been done as a management tool for 20 years. Why are we not restricting the buck harvest in order to supplement the does? So we're going to continue to harvest any buck and reduce the buck population as we're putting does into the population, thereby wearing out the bucks that are left, trying to breed the surplus of does that went in. In 2015, Jerry Nelson got up here and said that, well, the blue tongue wasn't any worse than any other year. Now it has become an excuse for the department. And we have seen what has happened up there. We've seen where it's gone. We need to have the four-point along with the antlerless, because we can't just throw a bunch of does into the population and not any bucks to breed them. It needs to happen collectively, and it needs to happen in a hurry, because our deer herd is in the toilet. It is hugely restricted. Our sales in the store, 7 years ago, we were stocking our shelves for deer products 2 to 3 times a day. This past season, we stocked the shelves twice during the season. So,
thank you, Freddie. Aaron?
Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Aaron Burkhart. I'm representing Washington Outfitter and Guides Association, Medhow Valley Sportsman Club, and we're going to switch gears here and go to Region 2 in the Medhow units. And our mule deer are 20% of normal. I've been there my whole life. We had a herd of 30,000 in the Medhow. The section, is it Ryan?
Brock.
Said that there's between 10 and 15,000. That's not an accurate count. If you could say between 10 and 15,000, you could say five. Our aerial counts and section counts, the herd is closer to 4,200 based on our counts. And he also led you to believe that it is because of fire that the numbers are down because there isn't enough winter range. That's a very small portion of it. We have the largest cross-country trail system in the nation up there. We have winter recreation. We have uninformed motorists. We kill way more mule deer on the highway than we do during hunting season. We are actually using Department of Fish and Wildlife land for recreation trails, which allows people in the wintertime to take their dogs, their bicycles on winter range. And there was an old saying back there many, many years ago when Woody Myers was doing a study for a ski hill in our area, your dog does not have to kill that deer to cause its death. He just has to chase it. This is not a bad winter. I've been through several bad winters. The deer and mule deer are in good shape. December and February, south slopes were bare. We have plenty of feed. We are harvesting too many does, mule deer does. We can't harvest any more mule deer does. We've got massive permit hunts, and we're allowing the archer hunters to shoot mule deer. The switch needs to go to mule deer. There's no deer in the burned areas. They've went elsewhere. So they're not chewing the browse down in that area. So if I can get you guys to save one mule deer doe, I think I've done my job. And I know that some of these other guys are talking about the whitetail areas and these other units. I don't know. I'm only telling you what's happening in our area. So, thank you
very much. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Next group of three, Kenneth Johansson, Keith Cook, and Jacob Turner. Kenneth, take it away.
All right. I live just northwest of Reardon over here in Unit 133, so I'm asking you to consider the elimination of antlerless tags in Roosevelt Unit 133 for a few years to see if there is any recovery of the right white-tailed deer herd there. I hunt mostly disabled hunters on our properties, and we were not able to fill any tags this year, and only one last year. Most of the hunters refused to take an immature buck or a doe because of the startling absence of the whitetails. We did not see a single mature buck this season. I would also ask to discontinue the Palouse tags that take out the mature bucks when they are rut vulnerable to the long-range high-power rifles until there is a noticeable recovery. My wife and I live on and own whitetail habitat in the northeast portion of Unit 133, including both summer and winter habitat of farm fields and canyon breaks. I have been an active observer of the wildlife on the same property my whole life, and this is probably the second lowest whitetail population I have seen. Also, everyone in our area would agree the population has plummeted, especially in the last 3 years. We had a devastating die-off from blue tongue in 2015, 3 years ago, and another heavy die-off this year, 2018, that doesn't seem to be recognized by any biologists. I forwarded about 20 photos of deer carcasses to them that I found dead from blue tongue, or I assume it was some sort of disease similar, on the farm. I received no response from any of them. Three of us with adjoining properties counted over 40 dead whitetails, and there were surely more we did not encounter, as this was widespread. Even a local Davenport businessman was commenting on the increased number of deer car collisions from sick deer standing in the roads. After two blue tongue outbreaks and bad winters, The deer have not been able to recover due to the high population of lions and bears. I have trail cameras out and have had as many as 7 individual bears and 4 lions identified at one time on our properties. When I find a lion kill, it usually is cleaned up in 2 days, and the lion only gets 1 meal and moves on as the bear and coyotes clean it up. I am finding remains of lion kills regularly this winter as the deer concentrate in the deep snow. We feel that if the game department does not manage the population numbers with quotas of special permits and antlerless tags, when it is obvious to everyone else that there is a crisis population decrease, the landowners around me are planning to shut everything down, and the hunting opportunities for the public will be lost anyway. So thank you very much for this venue of being able to talk with you, and I'm hoping you will consider this information and include 133 in the deer population crisis.
Thank you. Keith?
I'm here to second what everybody's been saying here. We have far too many predators. I've got as many as 6 different bears on my property and 3 different cats at one time. Our deer numbers are extremely low. I only had 3 pictures of bucks this year, and 2 of them were spikes. The other was a 3-point. That's all we had on 700 acres. Does, there was only between 15 and 20 does. I'm also an active hunter out in the Lincoln County area. Blue tongue has hit really hard out there, and we have far too many predators out there as well. I'd like to see the 4-point minimum come back, and I'd like to see doe permits pulled out of the situation.
Thank you. Jacob?
So I definitely appreciate the questions that Mr. Holzmiller and Mr. McIsaac raised earlier and the concerns as they sounded. So my first question is, in this day and age, how do you get youth involved and interested in things? I'll give you a hint. You got to get them hooked, right? You got to get them into it. And so I've got a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old boy, and my 6-year-old started playing basketball this year. Had a rough first couple games, wasn't enjoying it. His 3rd game, made his first basket. Now he thinks he's the best player on the team and is hooked. Okay, so I'm all for taking out most of the doe permits that needs to be done, but the youth permits, that's how you get them hooked. You're taking away a massive percentage of their opportunity to harvest a deer, to get hooked, to be a hunter. That's the future hunters. And when you're taking all those away, youth, and I'll even put disabled in there. You say we would support life-threatening illnesses. What about disabled opportunity, having that opportunity to harvest a doe? I'd be curious. I don't know what the numbers are because I can't find them on the website, but what are the percentages of doe harvest from youth and from disabled? I'd be curious what those numbers are, but the numbers of doe permits that were put out in 121 last year were crazy, and so we go from putting out all these extra permits in the last year or two to now we're taking everything away, everything off the board. Okay, it does need to be reduced, but don't take it away from the youth and don't take it away from the disabled. I'm not going to talk about seniors because that's not my job, but
you'll be there. Let us do that.
So my next question would be, who here is familiar with the 3 R's? Big movement in the hunting industry, a lot back east, a lot in the Midwest. Okay, recruitment, retention, and reactivation. I sat in on a conference in Cleveland this last fall, and there was a lot of talks. There was 2 full days on this topic, on the recruitment, retention, and reactivation. And a big part of me kept thinking over and over and over how I feel like our state is failing in those 3 aspects. And this is one way that recruitment is going to go down the tank, because we're going to lose our youth. We're already losing them to video games and everything else. But in hunting, that's the future of our hunting. That's the future of our permit sales and everything else. Hunting numbers are already going down. Hunter numbers are already going down. And this is just going to increase it over the years. It might be a few years down the road before you see this effect on it, but don't take these permits away from our youth, please. That's all I got.
Mr. Thorburn.
You, because I was just looking at the pamphlet. I haven't focused on Unit 1. 33 as I reviewed this. And I'm just looking quickly. It appears that there's only a general season 3-point buck for whitetail. Am I misreading?
Well, in the past, there have been a lot of doe permits, and we do have the antler list for the seniors and youth and whatnot.
I haven't seen that either. I'll have to look at it more, but it appears to me that the only thing that's going on there is a general season 3-point minimum. I don't know, Mike. Is that correct? Yeah. I'm calling on Mike Hatami and the biologist, if that's okay.
So I'm Michael Hatami, and I'm the district wildlife biologist for Spokane, cover Spokane, Lincoln, and Whitman counties. There is a general season 3-point minimum early, and youth, senior, and disabled do have the option to take a doe.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
For whitetail. There is no late season for whitetail out there. It's just by permit.
I saw that. Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
There is a blue season.
That's the permit, yep. It's a blue season permit. It runs for all of GMUs 127 through 142.
Thank you.
I have one question, and I'm going to pass it to Commissioner McKenzie. You mentioned that seminar that you attended on the 3 R's. That's, I think I heard something about that at some point, but I don't have any real data on it. Do you have anything that, who's doing that? Any information you could forward to us?
Yeah, I could definitely get you information. I would say who's not doing it, because it seemed like everybody across the East Coast, Midwest, there was state agencies, federal agencies, there was private agencies. There was a lot of people presenting from many different agencies that are...
If you could forward a point of contact or something, that would be appreciated. Thank you. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is also a question. I can't remember the father of the next Michael Jordan's name. But on our sheet here that lists all the youth hunt dates and permits... including antlerless deer on page 34. There's one that's a late season, and I had a constituent call me and say, for the youth tags, why are we looking at December time frames? Why can't the youth use their permit during the regular hunting season when they're out with their dad? And I apologize to the staff. I forgot to bring this up at the Wildlife Committee yesterday. But anyway, do you have any perspective on the dates of the youth permits? Should they be during the regular season, or do you think they're better off separated so that it's not so crowded out there?
That actually kind of goes along with the topic that I didn't hit. But so I think early on is perfectly acceptable. That early season, that allows them that opportunity to go out with their dad or whoever and get their doe or spike or whatever they end up getting. But, I mean, if it's a doe, they're out there one day, they get their doe and they're done and they're super happy. But the fact that if we take completely all the doe permits away, that's going to increase the pressure on bucks, right? And so that's going to not only increase the pressure, but increase the harvest on the bucks. And so that's going to stress out more bucks. It'll be less bucks, more does to breed, and we're going to have stressed out bucks going into the winter. So that was kind of a topic I didn't hit on earlier. But yeah, I would be all for the early season if that was the only place to have a youth opportunity, I guess.
Okay. Thank you guys very much. The last two are Paul Turner and Kelly Singer. And then after that, I'm going to have to shift it in overdrive. We're
about an hour behind.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you for giving me a chance to testify here. I'm Paul Turner. I live in Grand Coulee, Washington. I have property up in GMU 121 up at Hunters. I'd put my name down to speak, and I was just going to sit and listen. I haven't been to one of these before, but I was A little taken back. I'm in a business. I work in the education industry. And one of the things that we do in education is we base a lot of our decisions on good data. As I listened to the presentation that he gave, we talk about a three-year decision process. In 2015, he talked about the blue tongue. In 2016, he talked about the weather, the winter. The data that we do have stops at 2017. I haven't seen any data from last year. We're in 2019. That's the decision we're trying to make for this fall. How are we using 3-4-year-old data to make a decision? I'm lost on that. If I did that with the kids that I have to work with, that doesn't even register, make sense to me. I don't know what the reason is that we use such old data to make decisions on our wildlife. I mean, and nowadays, we're pretty technologically advanced, I think, in the world, and I don't understand why we're using such old data. That would be my biggest question. I just doesn't resonate with me, so I wanted to come up and talk about that, and that we need to, I don't know what the wildlife has to do, but they need to get modern or something. Anyway,
thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Kelly Singer. I'm actually from Hunters as well. I'm a professional wildlife biologist that doesn't work for WDF&W, and I'm not here representing the agency I work for. I'm also a landowner. I'm representing landowners that believe that we have issues with our deer herds. We do. And it's called unhealthy deer populations. I've heard so much already, and it just keeps talking. Everybody wants to talk numbers. We got to get these numbers back up. Well, a healthy deer population starts not with just a number. It starts with buck to doe ratios that get the breeding done in a timely manner. Brock is absolutely right. I've done my research. 90% reproductive or pregnancy rates. Yeah, they will get bred. Even with a small number of bucks on the landscape, they will get bred. But when I drive down the road on August 13th and the fawn trying to cross the road can't hardly walk yet because it's only about 2 or 3 days old, I did my math. I went back 169-day gestation cycle for white-tailed deer. That put breeding for that doe approximately February 1st. If you want to talk about the problems in eastern Washington, it's buck-to-doe ratios. I was here 8 years ago talking the same stuff, and all I ever got told was, when we get our population back, we'll get the buck-to-doe ratios back. You guys don't seem to understand that you can get better reproduction out of your herd with fewer does on the landscape with those ratios. Healthy does produce twins, triplets in your whitetails. When you have singles all the time, that ain't healthy does. That's just a moderate doe. And if they're not surviving these winters, fawns, they're going to die for sure. They ain't going to make it through this February because they're not in good enough condition when they're going into the winter 20, 30, 40 pounds underweight. And then you take the bucks that have to breed till February. It's impossible to expect a buck to survive a winter when they breed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 gestation cycles for the does. That's a big issue. The other problem I have, and I could go on for multiple hours, but I'm going to try to get this done quick. Our habitat's going to shit, and sorry for my language, in Northeast Washington. You guys do nothing for habitat in at least 121, where I live. WDF&W doesn't have land in 121. I don't think they have land in any of the Northeast units except for 101, which is the Sherman Creek Wildlife Area. They have chose to take all their wildlife mitigation out of our region, but this is the number one moneymaker for you guys is white-tailed deer hunting. The other big issue, you want to talk, I'm not a fan of four-point minimums. All you do is you take out your mature buck population over time. Yeah, you get a bunch of little bucks in the population. The one guy stated, oh, the two-year-olds ain't breeding. They're not doing anything. That's because there's not mature bucks in the population, and that's what a four-point minimum is going to get you.
Thank you. Sounds like there were some recommendations in there.
late rifle season needs to be a permit system. Because when you allow every hunter in the state of Washington that hasn't filled their buck tag to come to 105, 108 Northeast during the rut, you wonder why our deer populations are declining. You're over-harvesting our deer. But as most, I've heard this time and time again, whitetails are rats. They breed like crazy. They'll come back. Guess what? Our deer populations in Northeast Washington haven't been right since the winter of 92-93. We slowly get close to getting back there, and boom, we get another winter. There's a lot of habitat issues, you guys, and you guys don't do habitat work. And that's a frustration for me. You guys should be incentivizing the private landowners that are feeding these deer, your deer. Those are the ones that should